This podcast is intended for investment professionals. Hello, and welcome back to Elgium Talks, the podcast from Legal & General Investment Management. I'm your host, Mark Chappell, and this is the show all about the most important trends in the investment industry. If you look around, the world seems to be run by boards of one type or another. You've got universities, you've got charities, and schools, with boards making sure they're being run properly. And of course, in our world, we have pension scheme trustees and directors of the companies held in our index and active funds. Through our corporate governance team's work, we've seen hundreds of company boards of all shapes and sizes, from the best to the worst. So for this week's episode, I wanted to explore whether this experience could also provide some advice on board effectiveness for trustees. Our guest today is the person who has led Elgium's engagement with so many of these companies over the years, Sasha Sedan, Director of the Corporate Governance Team. Sasha, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Sasha, what do we mean by board effectiveness? What is it that you're looking for when you meet a company's chairman, a company's directors?
Well, if you think about what we're doing at the moment, which is investing in companies, then our job is to look at how they run. Mm-hmm. And obviously the board of directors of a company is someone that looks, allocates, and is the steward of that business. So in our role, what we're trying to do is to measure whether that board is doing its job. Remember, they get paid for doing this job.
Yeah.
And therefore, we want to see how they're doing and managing our assets or our clients' assets.
So I imagine to do that, you need to know what are the processes behind a board? How often do they meet? What's being decided? What are the ways that you can gain this kind of transparency from a board?
It's a bit like anything in life. You don't get all of the answers. Mm. And therefore, it's a bit like having a jigsaw puzzle with not all the pieces. And you're trying to work out whether they're doing the right thing. So you're looking for transparency. How many times they meet, what are they doing? I'll give some examples of these things, but you're not expecting to be in the boardroom. You can't have every investor sitting there in the corner listening to what happens.
And we don't need detailed minutes of X person said this.
And of course, confidentiality is of vital importance. Mm-hmm. But you can certainly get the nuance or the gist of whether a board is trying to achieve, strive, challenge the executive team. And I think that's what we're trying to get to. And there are, over the years, and it's certainly not from just Elgium, from all of us, we've seen best practice, we've seen things that work. And what we're trying to do is just to show and to elevate the best practice for all boards.
And that can be, these lessons can be applied to trustees, well, boards of any type, as you say, of charities, of trustees, for pension schemes, because company boards are so well regulated. I mean, there are a lot of regulations and there's a lot of attention from major investors like Elgium, like yourself, and how company boards are run. And that way we can see.
Yes, I think that's right. I think also a lot of this is, pardon it, but it is a bit of common sense. Mm. You see things, and the great thing about people who are striving chairman of boards, you know, in really difficult industries, they've had to learn different things. And just being there, seeing them, talking to them, being educated by them, you can then replicate that in other places where they haven't had to be like that. And I think the point of all of this is stuff that can be used for all kinds of boards, all kinds of committees, or all kinds of things where you're trying to oversee a management team or anything like that.
Completely. And yet the tradition has always been, if you want to know what the board is doing, read the annual report. And it's very much the chair's letter is basically what was the document for what's the chair thinking, but sometimes they're not quite as clear or give you as much information as you want.
Well, my team and I, we think the annual report is an absolutely vital document, but we can give many examples of where a chair will say, our board functions effectively, full stop.
how
that's a whole year of work with one line that it functions effectively. I'm sure it does function effectively, but could it function slightly better next year? What things could you do that even help enhance it so it doesn't just function effectively, it might even function brilliantly? Mm. And so these are the challenges that we do. And we analyse the annual report, we read those sections, and then we play them back to the chairman sometimes and say, could you please elaborate on this? Because this doesn't really tell us anything. And by the way, you're paid quite a lot of money. Could you just, as the investors, we'd like to know more about what your challenges are. And it can't always work effectively. Life doesn't work like that.
No, there's always going to be periods of stress, periods where the company is under external pressure, where the board has to deal with some difficult decisions.
And move people on. or make very difficult decisions, absolutely. And that's what we're trying to show for trustee boards, that there are some things which we've put in our report that show little bits that could be done better, could be improved, and we'll go through that hopefully.
Absolutely. So to go back to a point you just made about can they work more effectively, how can the board show this? I know the board evaluations have been mandated for a little while and there are some new regulations coming down. Can you talk a little bit more about board evaluations?
Yeah, and these can certainly be used for and are used by charities and other committees and stuff like that. So basically, after some of the crises that we've had in the past, one of the mandates that came out and we were approving of is to have an external board evaluation or board effectiveness review. Now, in the past, when that first started, you would get someone to come in and observe the board, interview the board, and to take very confidential to find out about what everyone thinks. But I think some of the boards were very scared that this was more of a marking me and seeing if I was doing my job right.
Precisely. It feels like you're interviewing for your own role.
A backward-looking thing. Mm. Whereas it's become and it's evolved, and it's certainly become now. Now, my board's working. I've got to do this. I might as well use this to find what can we do better, what can we learn from other companies, different industries, and that's where it's evolved quite well.
That's a very progressive view.
And also that the amount of information that they share in the annual report, they can't give all the detail, and we wouldn't want them to air their dirty linen in any way, but we certainly get some information that says, you know, our risk committee needs beefing up. We need to address the issue of having different skills on our board that address the future, and we will commit in the next year to appoint two new directors with, say, retail experience. By committing that in the annual report, we have something to talk to them about and challenge and make sure that they do that. And
exactly.
I think that shows us a company is trying, and all we want as an investor is to see that the company's trying on behalf of us to be as good as it can be.
And those evaluations, they must give you such an insight into what questions are being asked, what do they see as their future for the board, for their company, and whether that aligns with you as a shareholder.
Absolutely. And as you can imagine, 2019, it's pretty difficult running either a trustee board or a company board. First of all, there's a lot of new rules and regulations, not always helpful. There's also huge competitive industries out there, technological changes. It's not easy. There's demographic changes that are making big differences, and we're all going to discuss millennials and all of this stuff. So it's quite difficult. And so anything that can help a company or a trustee board be better must be useful.
I'd like to move on because it must be quite difficult for a chair to say, right, I'm going to evaluate the board and all these directors report into the chair. You've written quite a lot in the most recent annual report and a couple of pieces from LGM about the senior independent director, the lead independent director. You've often advocated that this is the person best placed to lead these kind of evaluations. What is it about a senior independent director, a lead independent director, what is it about their role that best suits them for this purpose?
Well, if you think of where companies are, a senior independent director is you have a chairman, you have a CEO, and you can have that on a trustee board in your own different executive capacity and the chair of the board. But sometimes there's tension between them. Sometimes the chair can be overbearing. Sometimes the chairman can be underbearing. And therefore, having one other person who is independent, who can be like a consigliere, who can be sort of a sound check and who can talk to outside parties if they're not happy with the answers they're getting, has been really critical. We've seen that many, many times in looking at companies. And I'm not really happy with what's going on this board, but I can't keep going to the person that's running the board because I'm not happy with how it's going. How do I get another message to that board to try to... Now, there's voting, and we don't have that with trustee boards, but we certainly have if we have a SID, we have someone that we could do. And I think that would be a really good person who also could then look at the board and say, I'm going to evaluate the effectiveness because I'm independent. Chairmen are brilliant, they're very important, but sometimes they get very sensitive if someone tries to criticise their own board that they're running. We're all human.
It's their work, they're very protective of it, and having that independent voice. And I know, so this has been introduced 15 years ago, and yet the role has developed. Can you tell us a little bit more about how a senior independent director as this kind of conciliary role has developed over time for the UK companies, in your experience?
Well, it's evolved a lot. And in the past, people thought it was only used if there was a crisis. And it is still very much used if there's a crisis, but it's used a lot more to try and evolve the effectiveness of the board. Who's going to be the next chairman? You certainly shouldn't be the chairman that decides that. So you have
very sensitive
SID.
Issue.
Exactly, and therefore you want someone who doesn't feel that they have to push their elbows out. It's my job. I am the SID. Mm-hmm. I might be in charge of the nominations committee for that. And you've also got the pact that can talk to stakeholders when there is some sensitive issues. It might even be about the chairman.
Yeah.
It might be about the CEO and the chairman and who goes first. That's a very big debate with us, and that might be the same on trustee boards. Mm. You don't want all of them, the important people, leaving within a year. And sometimes they don't want to leave, and sometimes it needs to be said which one is going and have an orderly process. The SID can be that kind of person that's involved in all of those things.
And I imagine having that responsibility written down, codified during times of peace rather than periods of crisis helps provide that sense of continuity during difficult times.
Yes, one thing we've all learnt with some crisis in the past with companies is when they haven't defined the role, mm-hmm. and that's when you find the tension really comes. That is not in your job description. Well, if you haven't got a job description, then maybe it's not. But that's why one of the things we talk about is making sure that that is codified. Not in prescriptive detail, but knowing where those boundaries are, which should happen in every company. And I think trustee boards are starting to do this, and I think this is a really would be a useful tool for them.
A senior or an independent director above the others, as it were,
absolutely.
With its own responsibilities.
And can we just say, this is for positive reasons, it's not for just for crisis. This is also to back the chairman when you're doing the important, really difficult things. And I absolutely agree with you, chairman. I've gone through it as well. I've soul searched and we're backing you. And therefore, that also gives investors or maybe trustees or anyone else have more comfort that this has been a whole board decision rather than being driven through by perhaps one or two.
I mean, that comes back to the transparency. As you say, is the chairman railroading her board of directors into a certain course of action? And if you have that independent voice going, no, I'm on board with this. This is a very clear course of action that's strategically correct.
As you said, it's mainly his at the moment.
Yeah.
But that's something that we're trying to push and address.
Oh, completely. I mean, that takes us on to, are the right people on the board? I mean, directors, as you say, we've got these directors which have refined responsibilities, the CEOs, the chairs, the lead independent directors, but you have multiple other directors who have been drawn from all walks of life. They need to be there for a reason. They have jobs on this board as well. Can you tell us a little bit about kind of skills you're looking for?
I think if I look at a trustee board, you know, it's really getting difficult now. Mm. And I think it's important that you have
regulation.
Absolutely.
Well.
And I think the skills you need. Now, you have to mandate certain people on the board because of employee representatives and quite rightly. But you certainly need certain skills to do the job. And I think what's happened in the past sometimes and some of the discussions we've had, sometimes have relied quite a lot and maybe too much on external advisors. And we'll talk about that. And the conflicts. There are conflicts because they want to get paid. And therefore, you need the right skills on your board. And so when we're talking to PLC boards or company boards, it's not always this person was really good in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Well, the last 20 years was fantastic and you did really well. Excellent news. But the next 10 years that you're going to be on the board are very different. And the skills you need, and we've seen that with retailers having so much property experience, but having less technology experience and internet experience. Not very good recipe for the future.
No, in a world of e-commerce, that
and we're
you
having,
need internet skills, you need technology, e-commerce, logistics, so much
absolutely.
More so.
And even when they've got that, they say, yes, you're right. We need technology skills. And they go and get someone from IBM 20 years ago. And you're like, that's not the same.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is it's difficult to get some of these people. You're not going to get someone from Google and Facebook want to come onto some of these boards. So you have to think differently and you have to have different ways of wanting people.
Yeah.
And you have to have different age and experience because you don't want everyone to have had, you know, all the scars. We certainly want people who've had scars and have seen things and have had experience. But you might need people who've have come from a different ilk. So it depends on what your business is and stuff like that. But different skills are very important. And obviously financial skills. That's something that sometimes is relied on trustee boards more to the external advisors. If you can have some of those skills or a little committee that could do that, that would be quite useful that could say, we'll do the heavy lifting for the trustees and then we'll bring it back to the board for discussion. But we've done quite a lot of the work behind that. And they're the sort of flexibility things that you want a board to be. You want it to be agile.
Yeah.
You don't want it to wait 6 months to have another meeting to talk about the same issue.
No, I mentioned that comes really back to the nominations committee of who are these people looking for and where are they looking in these pools of talent.
And does pension trustees, do they have a nominations committee? Or do they do it through the chairman? Again, in companies, you have a nominations committee. It's done by all of them. And I think it's very important for that. But we still have to challenge. And I think that's where you're saying, and then there's the course is, how long do they stay? So not, I mean, it's a very long and very important debate about what skills, because just saying I work for IBM doesn't equal that. Secondly, one of the things that you really want is you want to know, this is where board effectiveness reviews come in. They might be, the CV might be fantastic, but they don't speak much, or they're not contributing much, or they might be the other way around, they're contributing too much, and they're too, these are the things why you want to get the right, and we all know, like in any sport or any business, it's not always what the CVs do, it's when you put a group together that they work in a coherent way. Challenge, but also support. And I think that's where being a chairman and a trustee of a board is quite different now. And I think you need that coherence.
Exactly. It's so much more difficult. You need to build this team. You can't just have these star players. You can't have these CVs which look incredible on paper, but actually might not translate into the right skills that you need for your scheme.
And another point that we've made, and it's been in companies, but certainly coming to trustee boards, is the word overboarding. So you might have a star player, but then everyone else wants that star player. And they decide, that's great, I will go on many boards, I will go on many things. And then you're diluting that star player's ability to work for you. Because as an investor, I'm only concerned about the company that you're on.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, before you go on any other board, I mean, one of the recommendations that we always have is that they should ask the chairman if they can go on another role.
Not always.
And trustee boards, that might be difficult, but how many boards can you go on?
Yeah,
because it's difficult. We were just talking about that. This is not an easy job. Mm-hmm. It's certainly not as easy as it used to be. And therefore, should you have as many positions? Now, that comes into financial, how much you should get paid for doing such a good role. And that's a different debate. But certainly overboarding is an issue that has become very pertinent, not just in the UK, but it's something that we're pushing quite hard on company boards. But I'm sure on trustee boards, you don't want the star to be on too many boards.
No, how can you devote enough attention to the scheme or the PLC that you deserve? If you're sitting on seven boards, that's more than one day a week. In one day, if you split the five-day week, you're spending it at two different companies and trying to give everyone as much attention as we would expect from a normal director.
And we all know it's very easy on a piece of paper to say, I'll give everyone 15% of my time. It doesn't work like that. There are times where one company or one trustee board needs 50% of my time because it's in, hopefully, it's a supportive reason, but it might be a crisis or a big issue. And how do the other ones balance? So it's not what you can do when things are fine. Our discretion is when we say to companies, how do you manage the slack that you need to do that? And so I think that's quite important.
Absolutely. So to take that back to where companies might try to make up for this kind of lack of attention, lack of expertise, they often rely on these external advisors, as you were mentioning, where you've got consultants coming in advising the board, I think you should take this course of action, follow through with this merger and acquisition, whatever it might be. And yet, how independent is that advice, really, would you say?
Well, that is a big issue for LGIM, is that, I mean, we all need advisors. We all do. We all need help.
Yeah.
Sometimes we don't need to pay for it either. Like in life, we need, always could be some help. But I do think, I find, and I've seen this with companies very often, that companies do sometimes take that advice because they're the experts, completely as 100%. And you're going, just think about the conflicts. And the best one we can use is in M&A. You see investment bankers, brilliant investment bankers, with some articulate, beautiful PowerPoint presentations of exactly how it should do. But if the deal goes through, they make $100 million in fees. And if the deal doesn't go through, they make $1 million in fees. We know which way their advice goes. And that's not, I'm not having a criticism, but who is on your board or who is advising your board that maybe has independent fees? So still pay, but pay them whether the deal goes through or not, that you are asking for their judgment, not just for the economic value that could happen. Now, that might seem common sense, but the amount of times that we've seen that, and you can see that on trustee boards, that they're getting advice from lawyers, from advisors and everything else. They're very good people, but can you know that that advice is right? Are you paying them in the right way? So it might be the incentive schemes that you do, but you should you should conflict manage that yourself and think about that at the outset. And I don't think enough companies do that, and I'm not sure that trustee boards all do that.
And I assume for in the world of corporate governance, that's where you feel like it's not been as independent enough. You don't want it to come to a head where you're voting against a merger or an acquisition as a shareholder, because it's only come to this late 11th hour stage for you to have your say.
Well, we, big oil and gas company that we did vote against in the end, if they'd have come to us and said they'd had independent advice, but they had two advisors that ended up making $423 million of fees and they had no one on there that was getting independent advice, that's why we didn't feel... I mean, we felt concerned about the deal anyway, but if they'd said that we had independent advice and someone rubber stamped it and thought about it who was paid not on the dependence of the deal, that would have given us more credibility. So it's in their interest to do it, and that's back to the transparency.
Of course.
And these are big deals. Now, obviously, in trustees, it's a bit different. But are there people checking this? How are they checking it? Now, we use advice, and it's very good. It's just managing that expectation of how are they paid, how are they incentivized, and what is their ambition? Because sometimes the ambition is to do more work. And so that's another point. So it's not that they do bad. They want to please you so that you give them more work. That's, I mean, we all want to please.
Yeah, exactly. The upsell is always going to be there. I'd like to move the conversation on to an issue that you the team have talked so much about, which is board diversity. Literally, who is sitting on the board? And have we got enough diversity of thought is kind of the best way I've seen you put this. The Walker Review post the financial crisis posed the dangers of groupthink, that too many of the boards of major financial institutions were just making the same decisions because everyone basically had the same background and thought the same way. Can you tell us a little bit about how you're dealing with that at a board level?
Well, obviously, we meet hundreds of companies, and one of the discussions we have, and this comes into diversity of thought. If you see what's happened, we've had groupthink before. Mm. We've had that analysis done by regulators when you've seen banks and some of the things that have happened. But I do think it has been, again, it comes back to who recruited these people. Oh, I know someone. And it has genuinely, we have been told, oh, I was at the cricket match and I bumped into someone. And I thought they'd be brilliant on our board. Now, they might be, but that's quite an interesting recruitment process. And I think that's the kind of thing that we're trying to challenge and debate. Mm. And I think that the gender diversity debate, which is fantastic, and we're obviously pushing very hard on this, is great, but it has to be more than that. And it does link into the skills debate. It's not just that you've got someone who has the CV. It's not just you've got that. It's not the things that you want. It's what are you missing?
Yeah.
And I think that's always the point. We sometimes get these, some charity and trustee boards do it, but we certainly get it from companies. They have a matrix of all the skills, but it's the skills they've got. It's like, what skills are you missing on this board? And of course, it's like anything in life. It's hard.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're missing until you miss it, but you've got to try. And I think that's why we employ people, to try and think about those things. And I think skills, experience, you know, in the past we get companies, all of these people saying, we're going to invest in emerging markets. Well, who on that board has got emerging markets? They say, oh, we got someone in who worked at the Home Office and then went to the Foreign Office and they were the ambassador to China for a few years. Now, that's great. They were there. But are they the right person to challenge those debates? And those are the things that we are trying to work out. And it's also different ages. Mm-hmm. If you think about this, you know, especially trustee boards now with the defined contribution, they are having to talk to their members, and their members are asking them questions on climate change, plastic, diversity, and they're challenging them, and they're going, why is your board not diverse? And again, it's not, you know, you can challenge your asset managers as a trustee board member to be diverse and to do stuff, but if your board is all male or hasn't got any of these financial experience or doesn't have different age ranges, then it's not easy for you to justify that. Or back to the transparency. It's what are you trying to do?
Difficult conversation to have, I would imagine. And like you say, it's diversity of thought is not easy. To have lots of people who think very differently is not going to make a... it's so much easier to sit and make decisions with people who think exactly like me, because I know what I'm going to say, people are probably going to agree with.
And I think some of the best company chairs have said, I've specifically put that person on the board because they're like a terrier. And I wanted them on the board because I can't always, as the chair, I can't be the one always asking those difficult questions. But I need someone to ask that sometimes obvious question, but really ask that. How much do they get paid? Why are we paying them that? You know, those sort of things that everyone sort of knows and loves, yeah. But you need someone to ask that. And having that person in the room, the grit in the mill. And I think that is the point that we want from that. And that's different. Sometimes they might be the sort of person you think, whew, they're not the best teamwork.
Interesting. And just lastly on this point, where can you find the terrier? I mean, if you're not looking at the cricket match and who's sitting in the box next to you, where are companies not looking, or have they started looking elsewhere?
Because of the diversity debate and just the skills debate, people are looking in lots of different ways. And some of the headhunters and search firms, they have a code of conduct. They're looking in different places. They're not just finding their mates. Yeah. But secondly, you're looking at different from the public sector. Also, journalists, lawyers, you're looking at people. They're good at asking questions. They're certainly good at not taking the first answer. Yeah. We've certainly seen companies doing that and taking people from different skills. Now, the argument that they've had pushback, not from us, and we're encouraging them, is, but they've got no board experience. Well, it's like anything. Well, if you've never been on a board, you're never going to get on a board. You never will do.
Chicken and egg.
Now, if you've got 13 people on your board, you're allowed two, maybe one, who hasn't been on a board. Then after a year, they have been on a board. Do a good induction, explain them to them. Obviously, don't put 10,
yep.
But you can do that. And I think we're finding people from different walks of life. I mean, we've seen people from Mumsnet, we've seen people from charities who've set businesses up, who've gone on boards, who, you know, they've made money, they've got profitable businesses. They're the kinds of people you want. You've had people who run the World Wildlife Fund, who are quite good at climate change and looking at the environmental side, but they're not the financial experts.
Yep.
That's fine. Those are the kinds of ambitious boards that we want trustees and company boards to be.
And you want to make clear to boards that you're happy for them to take that risk.
Absolutely. And of course, it's only a risk for a period of time. And if it doesn't work, you are the chair of the board. You can say, we tried, let's shake hands and move on.
Interesting. But to fill the board with new people, some people have to leave. And of course, with directors who are there for 10 years, 10 or more,
20
independent directors in name, but if you're there for 20 years, how independent really can you be?
Oh, this is a big one for investors, and certainly should be for trustee boards as well. It's funny, it gets emotional. Mm. You talk to companies and you say, you know, there's a 9-year rule, which is not a rule, but it's a sort of guideline
from the
corporate governance code, that after 9 years, board director, the independent board directors are not independent. They can stay, but they're not independent. Mm-hmm. In other countries, it's 12 years and some it's 15. I don't think that the number is so important, but let's use 9 for now, or around number 10. The fact that you then refresh that, and you know you're going to refresh it, and it's not personal that we don't like Johnny.
Yeah.
He hasn't done a good job. It's the fact that that is the way we do it. And by the way, you can go on another board. You can do another 10 years somewhere else.
You now have 9 years of board experience to
absolutely
take to another board and say, I will be your independent
But they
director.
Do get, and it makes chairman's job easier. Chairman of board, say that. It's a lot easier because it's part of the process.
Yep.
Whereas on a trustee board, it's very difficult sometimes to move someone on because there hasn't been these kinds of processes. Whereas if you put in your remit or your association, you put in that there's a 10-year rule or a 9-year rule, you could say, it's just that. But that helps them bring the new people on, new skills, new diversity, and all the thoughts that we're trying to do. And I think that's very important. But the other reason, companies protest sometimes in the past, but I am so independent. You're like, but you're marking your own homework now because you made decisions 9, 10, 15 years ago. You bought something. You're now looking whether it worked. You were the one that did it. It's very difficult to take that detachment.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think sometimes it needs to be someone else that does that. And so refreshment is a key part of a board process.
And that all ties back into that, making sure boards are as effective as they can be. To begin to wrap this conversation up, I'd just like to touch on one final topic, and that's the topic of committees, because you mentioned it earlier, the nomination committee, specific technical committees that can help make the board's life easier, and yet there can be a tendency to have too many committees, or committees for the sake of having committees. Mm. Oh, we need a risk committee. Oh, of course we need a risk committee, but also we need a derivatives committee. We need any kind of product that we're selling committee, and you can end up having board papers that are reams of pages long.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, it's up to each company or trustee board to think about what they need. But obviously a nominations committee, as from what we've talked about, if the people on the board are the most important things that can make the challenge support, then make sure that you've got that sorted. Then instead of having reams of committees, again, when I meet chairman and I meet new chairman who've never been chairman, first thing I say to them is, it's your board now. You've got a year or two, but after that, you are going to be the one that we hold accountable, in hopefully for the positive reasons.
Exactly.
But therefore, if you need to make changes or you need to do it in a different way, the world is changing, then please do it because you are the chairman. And therefore, sometimes you need an advisory board. You might need a committee specifically on solvency, or our members are pushing us on diversity or climate change. We need a committee specifically on that. Sometimes made up with people, and it might be an advisory board, it might not even be a committee, it might just give advice. You might get someone from Greenpeace to who would love to be involved in that, but they're not making the decisions, they're just giving some input. And then you take that and you bring it back to the board. And once you finish that debate, you might disband the committee or the board.
I think that's a really important point. Because
you're not just doing this for box ticking, you're doing this to make the company or the board, the trustee board, as good as possible. And you might have some people who wouldn't got no interest to be on that trustee board, but they certainly would like to see one of a major pension scheme commit to doing something in an area and have the right skills before they make that decision. That's where the chair is the most important person to say, I think we should try that for 2 years. And if after 2 years it doesn't work or we don't need it, we'll disband it. But the most important thing is the discussion between the advisory board or the committee back to the main board.
So the communication,
so it doesn't get lost,
is key.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Sasha. I feel like what I've taken away from this conversation is that there are so many different ways to enhance board effectiveness for companies and, of course, for trustees in your experience. But it's clear that effectiveness is ultimately the aim, and you can use multiple nominations, committees, advice, all of these ways to really feed that through.
Absolutely. And hopefully the passion is coming through that when you meet chair, you really can tell when a company's trying, and a pension trustee board, and I meet many trustee boards, when they're trying to challenge themselves, challenge their asset managers or challenge the things, you can see that they're trying to make it better. And that's all. And if that transparency comes through, when we look back, as we always do in life, everyone does, and you look back and you go through the annual report, and you can see that that company has tried, you're going to give them more credit, even if it doesn't succeed, than one that just says, my board functions effectively.
And that's a perfect note to end on. Thank you so much, Sasha, for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for listening. If you'd like to find out more, be sure to read our article on elgim.com, and be sure to listen again next week for more Elgim Talks. Thank you very much, and goodbye. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in Legal & General investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.